Have you been getting into lots of arguments with your partner recently? Or do you get into lots of arguments in general? Does that cause a strain in your relationships? If so, stay tuned for today's podcast because we're going to explore how you can deal with conflict. Hi, welcome to this week's Mind, Body and Relationship Maze. I'm Tom Mackay.
And I'm Angela Dirks.
And this week we're going to be talking about conflict, particularly conflict in relationships. And conflict is something that we all have to deal with at different times in our lives. These days it seems that we can get into arguments pretty much about anything, not just in our personal relationships, but in every aspect of life. And I think it's one of these challenges that, you know, it used to be, I remember when I was at home, I don't know if you had something similar, Angela, but my mum used to say to me, like, you know, the things you don't talk about when you go out to meet people in any social situation is basically religion, sex and politics. Did you have anything like that when you were...
Something similar, yeah, something to that effect as well.
Yeah, because it's kind of like, those are the things that are going to bring up contentious issues for people. But these days it seems that, you know, it's not just those three things, it's pretty much anything. Anything we talk about can potentially bring up disagreement, even down to like the colour clothes that you're wearing or kind of the style of clothes you're wearing or, you know, what foods you're eating. These days there are so many ways that we can get into disagreement. And at the heart of it is often that, you know, we stop listening. We stop thinking about other people's points of view, and that can be such a big reason that we get into these disagreements.
Well, and absolutely. And there's so much emphasis now on the individual, on individual expression, individual freedom, etc. So we're very focused on ourselves in this day and age, and our views are prime, basically, and are the most important, and we need our views heard, and that's often why we get into conflict with our partners as well. So yeah, so why do we get into conflict? Lots of reasons. A very frequent one is that we have a disagreement, we have a different point of view, we have different wants and needs than our partner, which is not inevitable, obviously. We're two separate people, we have different ideas, different identities, different expectations as well about what our partner should offer us.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we have these expectations, we have these wants, which basically we'd learn from an early age, you know, throughout our childhood, through as we're growing up, as we go through different relationships in life, we learn that we want different things, we have different needs. And sometimes we get so focused on our own individual needs, we get into these conflicts with our partner because we don't realise a lot of the time that they don't have those same wants, or they don't have those same needs, or they have different ways they want to express it. We end up getting into arguments, and certainly, you know, sometimes these arguments can just keep going on and on, and often we're arguing and we lose track of what we're actually arguing for. We just kind of get into this disagreement, and yeah. I remember my parents that, you know, they'd start kind of screaming at each other, and, you know, it's just screaming and screaming.
Absolutely. I remember those long car journeys. Did you have that? Lots of arguments in the car about the map, not being able to read the map and how to get there. Loads of shouting and screaming in the car. I don't know.
Yeah, I remember. Well, it's like all these sorts of things. I remember once we were actually in Norway, and like my dad would like to drive through kind of to take photos. He was driving through like a military area, and we were in a green car. My mum was getting so frustrated; she was screaming. She demanded to be let out, and kind of disappeared for half a day.
Yes, absolutely. I remember sort of some scenes like that as well. Yes, and kind of often it's based on different sets of expectations and disappointment. So this idea that your partner doesn't offer you what you really hope they will offer you. So this idea that your partner can read your mind, that's a very common this expectation that your partner should know how you feel, what you want, what you need, etc. And when they don't, then it's this huge sense of loss sometimes as well. Well, that's not what I signed up for. How can they not know what's going on for me? Yeah, it's that sort of expectation. And of course, one of the frequent triggers for arguments and conflict in general is also that we have learned something in the past. So there might be a particular trigger, there might be a particular link to something that happened in the past, a particular set of expectations, an assumption about this is how we do things. And this frequently, of course, happens in the domestic sphere. So an idea about who does what in the house, or who does take care of me in a particular way. And if we're not feeling that our partner's taking care of us, then often we can get very frustrated.
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually wondering why you looked at me when you said it in particular it can happen in the domestic sphere. So basically, you know, we have these wants, these needs. We think that our partner knows what we're wanting. And so, you know, frequently I've worked with people who they get into awful arguments and disagreements, and it starts with something like, well, you know, my partner never takes the bins out. They don't care about me. And you know, sometimes once I asked somebody, I said, so have you ever told them that this is a problem? And it was like, well, no, of course, they should know that they have to take the bins out, because taking the bins out every week is a sign they care about me. And, you know, it's like, why wouldn't they?
Yeah. So mind reading is one of the sort of classic presentations that I come across when I work with couples in couples therapy. This idea that we are a couple, we're very connected, we're very close to each other, and therefore my partner needs to know, always needs to know what's going on for me, what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling. And that's just simply not true. We need to express. We need to express what's going on for us. We need to let our partner know when we're not happy about something. And that is something that's often very challenging for lots of couples as well, because they think that any expression of discontent, of not being happy, automatically leads to an insecurity in the relationship, to rocking the boat, so to speak, to not being quite as safe in the relationship. So what lots of couples do is, rather than expressing, they just shut down. So they don't talk. They keep the lid on it. It goes underground. And what couples then frequently experience, and I don't know whether you've ever had that experience, is this horrible, horrible sense of sulking. So not talking to each other, going quiet, but letting your partner know anyway that you're really, really unhappy. Do you know that feeling? Doesn't it feel awful, yeah, when there is this silence for weeks on end or days on end? Some couples really manage to go with that for a long period of time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I don't, you know, as well, one of these reasons why we don't express things is from a past experience of arguments. Certainly I found myself with, because my parents were getting into these awful arguments and these fights, and they were really horrendous to watch. And they'd go on for like a whole weekend. That after that, I left home thinking, I never want to get into arguments. So I'd do everything I could to avoid conflict. Because to me, it was like conflict was this awful shouting match. And I associated this real pain with any sort of disagreement. So it was like this, I avoid talking about anything, avoid expressing things I'm not happy with, because I don't want to rock the boat. I don't want to cause this argument. Or, you know, don't want the other person to leave us. Because if we have a disagreement, there's fear that the other person will leave.
Yeah, so for a lot of people, any form, and actually that's true for me as well, so my association with arguments, particularly when they get a bit loud and heated, is that I'm not safe anymore. I feel really threatened, and when I feel threatened, I'll just shut down, basically. And when I shut down, then I can't engage with my partner anymore. And this is the sort of pattern that actually I think a lot of people experience. So they rather not talk about it, they let it kind of pass, and they sit on it, and they sit on it, and they sit on it, until they can't sit on it anymore. And then there is an explosion, and then all sorts of stuff comes out. So that's very frequently the case with lots of couples. And very often there's also this association with anger. Anger is seen as something that can be scary, frightening. Anger is something that must not be expressed at all costs. I don't know whether you've ever sort of experienced that, the sense of, you know, I mustn't show anyone that I'm angry. Yeah, that's very common. Yeah, this sense of anger is risky. Anger might risk losing my partner, etc., etc. So that's particularly true when you have grown up in a family where either there was too much expression of anger or there was an under expression of anger. So a family where nobody was ever allowed to show that they were angry. That's very common as well.
Yeah, and I think you know, also anger sometimes gets associated with aggression and in relationships, where there's, you know, it's having that barrier, you know, having that distinction between what's anger, what's aggression. Some people think anger is aggression.
Yes.
Some people, you know, as soon as someone raises their voice, I know people that say, well, you're basically bullying me. You're kind of, you are being aggressive with me. And there's this blurry line between, you know, sometimes a natural expression of anger and how we interpret it. We might interpret it as being, this person's being aggressive, rather than kind of an appreciation that, that they're angry, and it's not.
It's normal, isn't it? It's normal to be angry. Why wouldn't we be angry? There are reasons to be angry about all sorts of things that happen to us in life. It's okay to feel angry, and it's okay to sometimes let rip as well, but not to the extent that you're starting to become hurtful to your partner. That's different. Yeah, it's different when you're starting to attack your partner. But when you're expressing that you're frustrated, then there should be capacity in the relationship for taking this on board. So it's quite different from actually going for your partner and having a go at them. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, some of the reasons why we get into arguments, and on top of the things that you've mentioned already, the other things are to do with thinking about the context, like what's going on around you. So have you had changes at work? Like if you're having to work longer hours, you know, that can have an effect on our relationships. If we're very stressed at work, sometimes we get stressed at work, we hold on to those feelings, we get home and we just take it out on somebody else, so we project it onto somebody else, and, you know, it's nothing to do with them, but we're feeling stressed, we're feeling wound up. You know, financial pressures is another major one, that you know, when we're under financial pressures, suddenly we've got this ongoing stress, and, you know, we start to get into, we have a build-up of anger, which is often due to fear. We have fear, which leads to anger, which kind of, then we kind of, you know, maybe take it out on the person that we actually care most about.
Absolutely.
And that can be really challenging, because it's at those times we really need to work on a relationship, because, you know, sometimes it's those times we even then end up losing our relationship, because we've been stressed about something else, we take it out on our partner, and then, you know, that the relationship goes and we're left, you know, really in a difficult situation.
Yeah, it gets even worse, yeah. So I think it's quite helpful. I think one of the models that I've read about recently was this idea of the onion. Have you read about that?
Yeah.
This idea that you start with the outer layer, so what's in terms of the causes for conflict. And the at the, you know, on the sort of outer layer of the onion, there might be the sort of contextual stuff that, that Tom just mentioned, which is, you know, stress at work, financial difficulties, etc. And then if you sort of work your way into the sort of inner layer of the onion, so to speak, at the core of it, there might be some really old stuff that's sitting there, some old wounds that you've experienced as a child that haven't quite healed yet, that really get triggered when your partner is talking to you in a particular way or about a particular topic. So it really helps to kind of peel away at the onion, so to speak, and see, where are we going to get with this? What's the actual root cause here? Why am I feeling so hurt by what my partner is saying to me?
Yeah, and it's those times we get caught up in that sort of argument. It's times sometimes to remember just actually just step back and just think, actually, what are we really arguing about? What really is going on here? What's, you know, is it really this we're arguing about, or is there something else that we're not really thinking of consciously, but actually is driving our arguments? And particularly if you've been getting into a lot of arguments regularly about maybe lots of different things, that may be a sign that there is something else underneath. It's, you know, peeling through to the lower the internal layers of that onion to find out, you know, what could be the real cause of the issues. And again, it could be kind of ways, things we've learned when we've been growing up. It could be kind of behavioural patterns, expectations that we have of a partner at a deeper level that we're not even aware of consciously, but in terms of things that let us know that we're loved. And, you know, maybe if a partner's doing things that, you know, like the bin issue, again, you know, not taking the bin out, that symbolises to one person that the other person doesn't love them.
Yes, doesn't care for them. Yeah, absolutely. So it's often the sort of, it's kind of the interpretation, that we make of a particular gesture or of a particular set of behaviours by our partners. So, yeah, not taking out the bins might signify to one partner, well, I'm not being cared for, I'm not being loved, absolutely. So it's not about the bin, that's the outer layer, yeah, but at a much deeper level, it goes to this sort of core of us, is this, you know, am I being cared for, is my partner paying attention to me? Absolutely. Good. And then, of course, there are also really corrosive patterns that can develop in some relationships where this goes on forever and ever, where there's a constant layer of dissatisfaction, where these core issues in the relationship are not addressed, where you're always working at the surface level of the onion, but not kind of digging deeper. And they can really lead to sort of behavior patterns that are particularly corrosive of the relationship. So Gottman, the psychologist who's done a lot of research on couples' relationships, he identified four of those that are particularly negative patterns that couples get into. And the first one is criticism. It's this constant going for your partner, nagging your partner, saying that your partner is not pleasing you in what they do, in sort of putting them down a little bit, or putting them down, which would be the second level, which is contempt. So it's really coming in with quite strong negative comments on your partner, just treating them with disregard and disrespect. That would be the second one. And then the third one that Gottman identified is defensiveness. So it's like when I tell you, well, can you please put the bins out, and your partner says, but I couldn't do this, but, and I'm really busy, but. It's the sort of not really listening, not really engaging with what your partner's got to say, just being defensive. And then the final one is kind of a step further from defensiveness, is when you just stonewall. So you put the shutters down, you don't take anything on board anymore that your partner's got to bring. And then, of course, there can be no communication when you've entered that kind of phase, stonewalling.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I'm sure, as with yourself and your practice, you see all these patterns in quite major ways with people. Mm. I mean, you know, sometimes when I'm working with people, you know, the level of criticism that they get, and when the partner gets into a kind of angry state as well, when it overwhelms them, and some of the things that they say to each other in terms of that criticism or defensiveness, it can be so extreme. And,
extraordinary. I mean, I'm kind of quite surprised sometimes how far some couples travel, basically, in their destructiveness. And it's really painful to witness. You think, God, I mean, these are things that could have been addressed at a much, much earlier stage. It didn't need to escalate to this point, really.
Yeah, and sometimes I experience that, you know, there may be also times where that you get into a sort of denial. I mean, certainly I saw with my parents that, you know, they'd have these major explosions, and then a few days later, my mum would seem to deny that they'd ever had an argument, that they, you know, they've always had a great relationship, and but actually, to me, it was sort of 80% of the time was just going for each other.
Yeah.
But even when she was older, before she died, it's like, when I brought these things up, she said, no, they never argued. And it's like, it's almost this defence mechanism where we kind of don't acknowledge it. And, you know, I think that's so important to be aware of this, not try and hide it, because we need to address these things, because these can be so corrosive and so damaging in a relationship.
Yeah, if you just go around and round and round in circles and never kind of find any compromise, any resolution, it's really destructive for the relationship. So Tom, like in your practice, what are you aware of? What really helps in terms of addressing conflict? What kind of advice do you give to couples?
Yeah, so some of the things that you can do to help address conflict, and I think one of the first things is it's really important that you address conflict at the right time. Mm-hmm. So don't do it, you know, we don't want to do it just in the middle of doing something else when we're distracted. It's about making a time that works for both of you. So finding a safe time and a safe place, a safe environment, somewhere where you can talk, you know, in a relaxed way, where you feel kind of comfortable.
Absolutely. And then it really also helps to just focus on one issue at the time. So generally, if you are listening to your partner, and if they bombard you with 10 issues ten issues that they find frustrating about you, it's just too many. You can't take them on board. So have an agreement that you just focus on the one thing that you really want to talk about, and just the one thing only. And if there's more that comes up in the course of the argument, you can kind of talk about it another time, agree to talk about it another time, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes starting a conversation with something positive can be useful. So it might be that, you know, over the last year, we've been getting on really great, and recently we've been having a few arguments, and I'd like to look at ways to help kind of move forwards. That can be really useful to kind of remind about the positive. So don't just focus on the negative, because that often kind of brings up defensiveness. It can bring up the wrong kind of the wrong sort of neurological state to be in to have this discussion. So that can be really useful. And along that as well is when you are expressing it, it's really useful to start with I feel statements rather than say kind of like, you never listen, you're such a so-and-so, or whatever it happens to be. Because immediately, as soon as someone says, you are, or you never do this, what happens? Well, yeah,
the shutters come down.
Shutters come down. You feel really defensive, and you know, that's probably going to lead to another argument.
Yeah.
So when you're saying, you know, I feel upset when sometimes you're kind of watching television as we're trying to have a discussion, or you know, I feel anxious when we're out and you kind of say such and such to me, or whatever it happens to be. So starting with I feel, because also when we're expressing how we feel, if we're feeling a way like I feel sad, I feel upset, like what happens? Well, it tends to be the other person, you know, people want to help people, they don't want people to feel in pain of any sort.
No.
So when we say, you know, I feel upset, I feel kind of sad, I feel whatever it happens to be, the other person's more likely to actually begin to listen. Because then they realise how it's impacting you. Because it may be that they don't even realise that the impact some of these things have. So when you're expressing that, it can be very powerful.
Absolutely. And and also kind of along the same lines is then also not always dragging up lots and lots of different issues from the past. So saying, well, you're always doing this, you did this a year ago, or 2 years ago, I remember when you did this or said that. So bringing up endless issues from the past gets really frustrating for the partner. And again, they're not then listening, they're not willing to take on board what you're experiencing now. So start with the here and now. What is it right now that you are troubled by with your partner?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and that could take a lot of practice as well, kind of suppressing those things.
Because, totally.
You know, it's easy to build up those things.
Yeah.
And also something that's really important when we're kind of having any sort of argument, when we're dealing with any sort of argument or conflict, is being able to take the other person's perspective. And that can be really challenging, but it can be so powerful. Because we all have a very different view of the world. I mean, we just walk down the street and, you know, if two people witness an accident, for example, and then have to describe it, they come out with completely different viewpoints, different statements. And it can be so different, it can seem like they were witnessing different things. And it's the same with us, we have a very different perspective on life, we have very different life experiences. So in order to have a constructive discussion with somebody in any context, not just in personal relationships, we need to be able to imagine what it's like to step into their shoes. There's an expression which is, to know somebody, you need to walk a mile in their moccasins, which I think is a lovely expression. It's about, you know, you have to kind of really imagine what it would be like to be them. Along those lines as well, like when I went to drama college, I went to music college and drama college and then studied psychology. When I was at drama college, one of the things we were told was, you know, sometimes it can be really good when you're getting into a character is to put on their clothes and dress like them. Imagine what it's like to be them, really step into that world and experience what it's like for them. And
Sorry. I was butting in there. Yeah, one exercise that I frequently do with couples, because in order to step into someone else's shoes, it's really helpful to, first of all, listen to what the other person is bringing. And that's something that couples frequently don't do. Because, you know, your partner's saying something, you're having a response to it, and you immediately want to come in there with a repartee and just answer back. You interrupt, you don't really listen. So in order to kind of be able to step into your partner's shoes, as Tom says, it's really helpful to just listen, have a practice where you just listen to each other for 5 minutes, you just listen to your partner, and you let them know what you heard them say. So your partner's talking about something, you say, so what you're telling me is blah, 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 and then you check with your partner whether you got this right. And your partner can clarify if that's not what they've said. And what you can also then do is actually let your partner know that you understood what they've said. So you could say something like, well, that sounds really tough, or that sounds really difficult, or I can imagine that this must have been really hard for you. So you're starting to build a little bit more empathy for your partner that way. It's a fantastic exercise. So try to practice it, and just for 10 minutes, where one of you just listens and reflects back what they heard the partner say and what they heard their partner express on a feeling level. It's very powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, part of that as well is, as you're listening, is just hold back the urge to advise or kind of, you know, give you a kind of, you know, what you think is trying to solve it. Like, it's so easy when we're listening to people, when they're talking about problems and how they're feeling, we think, oh, I want to solve this. So offering a solution. Listening isn't solving. Listening is, as Angela said, it's about taking it on board or maybe reflecting back or just showing that you're there, showing that you're listening.
Absolutely. And when you feel like, well, I can't do this anymore now, when you kind of, when you notice that that you're getting into a situation where there's no more capacity to take on board what your partner's saying, where you get very agitated yourself, where you get really frustrated, where you both start to kind of ramp it up, so to speak, again, and you get into the argument, then also agree to postpone the argument. Sometimes when it gets too much, when you've reached your capacity, stop and decide, we'll do it another day, and then we'll talk about it again. And then you can also try to work towards a compromise, and compromising is not easy always. And for some couples it's really easy, it's really difficult because they see compromise as losing, so to speak. So think about what your underlying assumptions are about compromising. For many people, they think of compromising as giving up or as losing, as I say. So think about that, and think about really, you know, what compromising could achieve in your relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think we covered so many different things here. And I just want to thank you for tuning in today. And if you want any more information about relationships and how to improve your relationships, head over to therelationshipmaze.com, where we have lots of resources, lots of different articles that I think you'll find can help you in different areas of your relationship.
Yeah, so we're addressing pretty much everything that we've talked about in the podcast today in a lot more detail in various sessions in the Relationship Maze.
And we hope to see you next time on the Mind, Body and Relationship Maze.
Bye for now.
Bye. I hope you enjoyed this week's podcast. If you'd like to find out more about creating great relationships, go to therelationshipmaze.com. And I look forward to seeing you there. And remember to tune in to the next podcast.